So we have a problem this week. And the problem is borne out, it is expressed in a leitmotif, in a word that repeats itself over and over again throughout the narrative of redemption. We are, after all, in the time of redemption, singing redemption song, so to speak, for the last 2 weeks and the next week. We're at that place in our week-to-week meditation on sacred text where the Torah distinctly invites us into a conversation about what are the constituent elements that participate in this thing we call freedom. Essentially, what does it mean to be free and how do you get there? So the Torah wants to bring our attention, and as it does, like any good speech or any good conversation where someone isn't listening, the Torah will repeat a word or a phrase over and over again until we finally get, oh, this is what you mean. And one phrase that I said before repeats itself over and over again is the phrase of Lo Shamu, and they didn't listen. Fundamentally, the Torah wants us to know that freedom is a derivative of a faculty, a quality, a strength, if you will, a capacity, a developmental stage, a line of development, whatever it would be, called shmi'a, listening. Now, lest you think, as you, I'm sure, are thinking, that I'm speaking only of those who couldn't hear, those who wouldn't hear, like Pharaoh, or even, of course, the Israelites. It would seem that even Moses, as one of the three protagonists in this week's Torah portion, is gripped with a sense of not being able to hear, or more accurately, not being able to make himself heard. This week's Torah portion begins with Moshe saying, "Listen, God, from the moment that I came to speak your word to Pharaoh, it didn't go so well." Right? Things didn't work that well. In fact, it got worse. Now you want me to go back and speak? I spoke to the Jewish people, and now I'm going to speak to Pharaoh. The Jewish people didn't listen. The Israelites didn't listen. How is Pharaoh going to hear me if even the Israelites couldn't hear me? Sure enough, God reinforces, though, his trust and his faith in Moses' leadership and sends him. And the Torah begins, Vayidaber Kain el b'nei Yisrael velo shamu elav mikotzer ruach umeavodah kasha. Moses nonetheless goes to speak to the Jewish people, and in essence, they still can't hear him. He doesn't know how to make them listen. How do leaders work to get us to hear? And what do they have to work against? What is this resistance that Moses apparently has, that Pharaoh certainly has, and the Israelites, the Jewish people, also have? Most of this insight, in fact, maybe all of it, with a couple of moments here and there, is from the great Aviva Zornberg in her book, The Particulars of Rapture. She quotes Rav Nachman of Breslev. Rav Nachman has a teaching about something called desire. Rav Nachman says that in life, we have letters, like in the Hebrew letters, let's say, that are these forms. They have just they're glima, golem. They're just this matter, the matter of a letter, a consonant. And the unique structure of the Hebrew language is that without these little points underneath them, without these little vowel points, the letters, as many who have tried to read from the Torah scroll without having ever practiced before know, you can't make sense of it at all. Hebrew language is structured in that way where if you don't have the vowel points, the nikudot, which means literally points, if you don't have these points underneath the underneath the consonants, there's no language, there's no communication, there's no structure, there's no meaning, there's no making meaning, there's no story, there's nothing but letters. And Rav Nachman says, playfully misreading a verse from the Song of Songs, that God has given nikudot hakasef, God has given that in the story of the Song of Songs there are these goblets made of silver, nikudot hakasef. He says, nikudot, goblets, can be read as points. Kasef, which means silver, can also be from the word kisufin, which means desire. Points of desire. He says that the points of desire, the nikudot hakasef, the nikudot, the points of kisufin, of yearning, of longing, of wanting, of ratzon, animates our life. And that the letters of our lives, strewn about as they are, often haplessly, often in a disintegrated way, they take form, they take shape, they become a story through the vivifying and edifying and innervating quality of yearning, of desire, of aching, of wanting. The Nikudot HaKasef, Rav Nachman of Breslov says, is the way out of the paralysis, of the anomie, of the cynicism that closes us off from hearing, from deep listening. And then he says an amazing thing. He says that you should know that in our lives we all have miniot, we all have obstacles. And the obstacles, he said, in our life, and Rav Nachman speaks about, Rav Nachman Breslov, the great-grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, spoke about obstacles all the time. He knew what he was talking about. He had many obstacles in his life. Rav Nachman says the obstacles in our life come along and they increase desire. Obstacles are put in our path, says Rav Nachman, in order to increase our desire. There is a block, there's a sense of not, there's a sense of I can't go, there's a sense of giving up hope. And Rav Nachman of Breslov says that that miniyah, that obstacle, acts to increase longing. Hacheshek nisgaber al yedei hamaniyah. Desire increases when there's an obstacle. Well, lest you think that this is just his insights, I then read Aviva Zornberg quoting one of my next favorite authors, Adam Phillips, with a brilliant insight. I wanted to read it to you. The paradoxical power of obstacles is the subject of an essay by Adam Phillips, where he quotes Sartre in Being and Nothingness. A walker is confronted with an overhanging cliff face. For the simple traveler who passes over this road and whose free project is a pure aesthetic ordering of the landscape, the crag is not revealed either as scalable or not scalable. It is manifested only as beautiful or ugly. Commenting on this, Phillips writes, if I am simply on a walk, the rock face is an obstacle. If I'm a painter, it isn't. But the absurd, the psychoanalytic possibility that Sartre does not consider is that I may realize I am on a walk only when I perceive the cliff as an obstacle. That is to say, the only way to discover your projects is to notice, to make conscious, what you reckon as obstacles. The desire does not reveal the obstacle reveals the desire. Did you get that? The desire does not reveal the obstacle reveals the desire. It's beautiful, I could read the rest, but you get the point. Here we have someone, Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, the teacher, the quintessential teacher. He'll be known throughout Jewish history as that role, the role of the teacher, the pedagogue. He's not known as Moshe min ha-manhig, Moses the leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, the one who gives over in word. And here he is in the beginning of the Torah portion. He says, God, they can't hear me. Anochi, aral svatayim. I can't speak. I have an obstacle. I have an obstacle to speech. You don't want me to go. And God says, yes, I want you to go. Your obstacle reveals your desire. You can't speak, you want to speak. You can't go, you want to go. Your obstacle is a deep expression of what you are called to be, my wounded healer. My student, Moshe Rabbeinu, who else could I send to the Jewish people who have lost all hope? Who else could I bring into their midst? Those who only see the obstacles now but don't see the desire that is latent, that is in potential there, awaiting your magnificent ignition. Who else could I send but you who have struggled with this? Who else would show them the way? And the only way to freedom is through opening to desire. In a funny way, more often than not, people come to my office to talk with me about how Buddhism and Judaism can mingle. That's maybe one of the most common pastoral things that I have to contend with. You know, in the Talmud, they came to Hillel and they said, Hillel, tell me the whole Torah on one foot. And in my line of work, they say, Rabbi, tell me how Buddhism and Judaism are really the same in some way. And inevitably, what happens is that I say, or they say to me, and then I have to say in return, they say, what are you going to do, Rabbi, with desire? What are you going to do with desire? Isn't desire clearly and unambiguously nishta zoi Buddhist thing? It's not such a Buddhist thing, desire. After all, the Buddha said, right? Suffering is caused by dukkha, which doesn't really mean what we think it means, dukkha meaning suffering. It means thirst, really. And inevitably, I have to say that, along with Mark Epstein, who just wrote a book, Opening to Desire, that desire to be free is what every politician in this time is trying to awaken in all of us. And you can name freedom in any way you'd like, economic freedom, social freedom, whatever. And the terror that they have when the electorate, when the citizens have apathy, when they say, we don't want to hear, velo shamu, we're not interested, we have no desire. When our obstacles only show us what we can't do and not what we really want to do. One of my favorite stories, and with this, I invite you to think deeply about this. One of the great Sufi mystics who reminded me so much of Mullah Nasruddin, of the wise man of Helm. His name was Mullah Nasruddin. Very much those who know the genre of the wise men of Helm, they give you stories that are full of very funny moments that are in some way concealing a very deep truth. So one of my favorite stories from that Sufi tradition tells a story of this particular saint sitting in the middle of the marketplace eating hot peppers. They had spilled out on the ground. Methodically, he's reaching for pepper after pepper and he's putting them to his mouth and then he's crying and wailing and crying and wailing. His friends come by him and say, what's wrong, Mullah? What's the matter with you? Tears are coming down his face. He's crying. And he says to him, through his tears, I'm looking for a sweet one. Looking for a sweet one, you know. Desire can be seen as that thing that perpetually disappoints. Desire can be seen as, in certain schools of psychoanalysis, in certain schools of Buddhism, as the very source of all of our suffering. Or it can be seen, as Rav Nachman teaches, as the tantric path in Buddhism teaches, as all of the great mystic traditions teach, that if we open to desire, if we open to the yearning that we have for freedom, then we reread our lives, the obstacles, as clues to what it is that we yearn for. Those places in our life where we are stuck are no longer the places we are stuck, but little messages that are expressing a yearning to be seen, to know ourselves deeply, to give hope to places within us that might otherwise be full of despair. So on this Shabbat that we honor the new month that heralds the birth of the trees, Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, the new year for all of the trees, the bracha, the blessing is that beneath the cold winter that has now just reached us, we are able to discern amidst that obstacle the beginning of the saps rising. For indeed, with faith, beneath every hard, cold ground is the seeds of our liberation.